welcome to a Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer, and the show will start off with a check-in with the walnut industry with a feature report from Taylor Chalstrom. That's coming up right after this.
Being a member of the California walnut industry means working together to advance the industry through advocacy, research programs, and promoting walnuts with smart, cost-effective marketing. Learn more at walnuts.org.
The spotted lanternfly, which is an invasive pest in many parts of the eastern United States and is spreading westward, has multiple cultivated and wild hosts in California, including species of walnut trees, according to Surendra Dara, director of Oregon State University's North Willamette Research and Extension Center. Dara has been researching spotted lanternfly for a number of years, and recently him and his colleague Roland Boko, assistant specialist in the University of California Cooperative Extension, developed geographic maps that mapped out the risk of spotted lanternfly in walnuts and other crops in the state. Dara explains the biology and some of the physical characteristics and growth stages of this pest.
Spotted lanternfly is actually a plant hopper. It's a pretty insect. It is about 1 inch long with bright colors and spots. So it looks like a very pretty insect, but it is also a dangerous insect because of the host range and the damage it can cause to some of the important cultivated crops we have in California or elsewhere. It is a hemipteran insect. So the life stages include eggs, which are covered by a protective coating. And it overwinters in the egg stage, so it works out well. Then it has 4 nymphal instars. The first 3 are dark with black with white markings, and the 4th instar has red and white and black markings. Then you have males and females. So it has only 1 generation per year. In its typical native environment or the new environment in the eastern United States. So what eggs are laid from September to December, and then egg period continues for several months. So they hatch in spring to summertime. Then again, you have adults late summer to fall. So this is its life cycle. And obviously, when it moves to a warmer climate, like something like California, we don't know exactly what happens to its life cycle. It will definitely shorten, but would it have multiple generations? We don't know. Probably not. Let us hope it does not have that situation. So I already mentioned the physical characters, and what it does is it has this piercing and sucking mouth parts. So it inserts the stylet into plant tissues and sucks the plant sap.
Spotted lanternfly has a number of hosts in the state of California. More specifically, according to Dara, 22 cultivated hosts and 70 wild hosts.
Some of the cultivated hosts in California are apples, apricots, cherries, grapes, the most important one. And then we have peaches, pears, persimmons, plums, pomegranates, roses, and walnuts. So these are already quite a few important crops. And just grapes and walnuts are quite a bit. The more than $5 billion of crop value just for two commodities.
Because of the fact that there are so many hosts in the state of California that spotted lanternfly can accommodate to, including some agricultural crops, Dara and his colleague Roland Boko created risk maps using QGIS open source software to map at-risk areas in the state. For walnuts and other crops, they determined risk based on acreage in certain counties and value in certain counties.
These mapping was done both for cultivated hosts and wild hosts. Cultivated hosts are easy to track because we know where they're grown, how much of an acreage they have, and the value. But for wild horse, it is based on multiple reports, and some estimation was also there. So coming to the risk of spotted lantern fly to walnuts, we have three sets of maps. It is based on the acreage. Then it is based on the value of walnuts in different counties, and then yield. So let us quickly look at acreage. Based on the acreage, San Joaquin County is at very high risk, followed by Tulare and Butte counties, and then Stanislaus and Glenn and Sutter counties are at moderate risk. So we have these levels, and then there are other counties that are at a low risk or very low risk. And then coming to the value, then we have Butte and San Joaquin at very high risk because of the value of walnuts produced in these two counties. Then we don't have anything with the high risk. Then the counties with moderate risk are Stanislaus, Glenn, Sutter, and Tulare. And low risk counties are Kings, Yuba, Colusa, and Tehama. Then rest of the state is at a very low level of risk.
Dara explains the ways that the five risk assessment tiers are broken down.
Like 20%, up to 20% is very low. 21 to 40% is low, and 41 to 60% is moderate, and so on. So it all depends on what is being produced during that year that we use that particular crop report. And then we divide it into five equal levels, and then we put that, the ranking accordingly.
Currently, Dara said there is research in the state being done to assess the risk of spotted lanternfly and potentially prevent damage from an associated invasion. Dara focuses more on the outreach, but he said other UC personnel are focusing more on the biological side of things.
When we have an invasive pest like spotted lanternfly, classical biological control is usually the best solution for long-term and area-wide control. So egg or nymphal parasitoids are being examined, and if they are found host-specific, that means they are going to attack only spotted lanternfly. We have the possibility of them being released for spotted lanternfly control. But research in terms of applied research, other than that, we are not doing any applied research in California because we don't have the pest yet. But CDFA has put spotted lanternfly on the watch list, and they're working on looking at various ways to mitigate its invasion. More than that, everybody has to take part because this is not just an agricultural pest. It can hitchhike on vehicles and arrive on packages and everything that is coming from infested areas. So more than the government, everybody, it is every citizen's responsibility to be aware of this pest, be able to identify the, mobile stages or egg stages, and then report to the concerned authority.
Dara said something key for growers concerning spotted lanternfly in the coming years is going to be increasing awareness of the pests within different ag industries.
When we have an agricultural pest, it is typically growers, researchers, and concerned entities that are involved in addressing it. But this pest can attack plants in the landscape areas and the backyards, everywhere. So it is not just an agricultural pest, but it is also a huge nuisance pest for urban areas too. Because of that, several growers are already aware of the pest and what's being done, but they could also contribute to increasing the impact of outreach by communicating to their friends and other people. And basically, we want everybody in California to be aware of the pest, be able to identify and delay its invasion as much as possible.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
Practicing good soil health is one of the best ways a grower can maximize their yield in both their fields and their orchards. Today, we're going back to the basics, starting with the first in a multitude of segments with Dr. Carl Wyant of Helier Ag. Wyant will be starting off the first segment of this series by explaining the basics of soil health.
If you look at some of these foundational documents on soil health from the FAO or the USDA or NRCS, soil health has a somewhat esoteric meaning. It's a soil health is a measure of that soil's ability to support continued function of that ecosystem. So there's soil health for farms, soil health for forests, and you can kind of go down the list if you wanted to. But really, I think for a grower, when you think about soil health, a good way to just kind of cut to the meat on it is to think about soil health as the biological integrity of your field. How alive is your soil? Because that soil biology contributes to so much of what we see as healthy soil. And that's ability to store water, the ability to have good drainage, the ability to have good oxygen levels in the soil, and the ability for a microbial community to process nutrients and release nutrients to the soil so plants can take them up, in a whole host of other functions.
Wyant explained that soil microbes are easy to forget about just based on the fact that they're hard to see alone, but said that they are of utmost importance when it comes to management practices of not only fields, but also orchards.
You know, just consider in a tablespoon of soil, you have 1 billion bacteria and 1 million fungi. If you were to sit and count them all, lots of just sheer quantity to think about, and you can't see it, so you're out of sight, out of mind. That's always been a challenge, you know, throughout agricultural management history. And so we have this component, this tool, this partner in our growing operation with these microbes. And when we can manage them in a way that really maximizes that abundance, maximizes that diversity of microbial counterparts like fungi and bacteria, we really bring a key partner back into the soil that can help push through some of these challenging management concerns: drought, water quality, compaction. There's a whole list of things that these microbes can help alleviate, and it's through those soil health properties.
Wyant agreed that essentially all agricultural crops can benefit from a healthy soil microbiome.
The more we learn about this relationship between plants and microbes, and then the soil, that sort of parts of the triangle, is that they're all interdependent on each other. The soil needs the microbes to help restructure the soil particles and to make what we call aggregates. That helps with water holding capacity, that helps with oxygen levels and nutrient mineralization. And you have these plants that are actually dependent on microbes for their day-to-day and actually go into key partnerships during the growing season. So mycorrhizae is probably your most famous one, where plants are paying for these certain kinds of fungus to do work for them. And in return, the fungus brings in more phosphate and more water. If you grow nitrogen fixing crops, of course, that plant is paying for these special kinds of bacteria to fix nitrogen from the air and make it plant available. And so those list goes on and on. There's such an interdependence between the soil, microbes, and plants that they're easy to forget about because you can't see the microbes, but they're absolutely crucial for modern growing systems.
Wyant said when he comes across a grower that doesn't know much about soil health or isn't practicing good soil health, he explains to them that there are 3 spheres to soil health to get started.
One is the physical management. That's where your tillage and all your implements come into play. You have chemical management, where you're managing fertilizers and so on. Then you have this biological management, which that's the new piece for most people. Most folks haven't managed that biological component of their soil and haven't managed it actively, at least. So the nice thing about the biological management of fields is you have a list of choices that you can choose. So there's not one size fits all here. You know, if cover crops are good for your operation, that's a way to improve your soil biology. If you need to add a food source, that's a great way to improve your soil biology. And if you need to add compost and mulches, again, another way to improve your soil biology. So those are just 3 examples. But the nice thing about managing biology, not everybody has to do the same practice. you really have a whole menu. And I think that's where working with folks that are, have experience in the soil health space can really help you cut that learning curve and get to where you got to go faster.
You're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Once again, I'm Lori Boyer, and I'll have a check-in of regional and agricultural news right after this word from our sponsors.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
In regional agricultural news, investigators found two Turlock employers violated a temporary agricultural worker program by shortchanging pay and failing to provide safe housing and transportation, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. The investigation recovered about $83,000 in back wages for 92 workers, according to the department, and charged $37,000 in civil penalties against Roberto Perez Farms and Perez Brothers Farms Incorporated in Turlock. Both farms allegedly violated the rules of the H-2A program, which allows employers to bring foreign nationals to the U.S. for temporary or seasonal agricultural jobs. The program requires employers initially to try to fill the jobs with domestic workers, pay specific rates, and provide housing and transportation to work sites. Investigators found the Turlock employers illegally rejected domestic workers and did not pay the program rate to workers hired alongside those with H-2A visas. The farms also did not pay H-2A workers with at least three quarters of the work hours in their contracts, nor pay them their required wages, according to the department. Both additionally illegally deducted pay and did not reimburse H-2A workers for visa and border crossing fees. Vintage Wine Estates, among the largest wine companies in the U.S., has reported fiscal second quarter earnings dipping 7.8% from a year ago, but adjusted earnings jumped 137% in that period. Quarterly net revenue for the Santa Rosa Headquarter Group of California and Pacific Northwest Wine, Spirits, and Cider brands was at $83.6 million, up by nearly one-third from almost $63 million a year before. CEO Pat Roney said in the announcement that the impact of inflation will likely result in bottle price increases. He said they are operating in a tight labor market as well as facing challenges with the timing of deliveries of dry goods, and he said they are working with their suppliers to prioritize needs and carefully manage customers' requirements. And he says they will implement price increases as early as March to address the inflationary impact on input costs. Every year, pallets loaded with honeybee colonies hit the soil in California orchards to pollinate the almond crop, and they are targeted by thieves. Authorities and others in the business say the culprits tend to be other beekeepers. Thieves are after the pollination rental income, which this year is $200 to $220 per hive, according to beekeepers. Towser Apiaries, a family beekeeping business in Northern California, reported that 384 of its hives were stolen from the Hopland area in Mendocino County between January 19th and February 1st. Those hives are valued at $150,000 plus $80,000 in pollination rental income. A day after the hives were reported missing, a tip led law enforcement to a resident in Yolo County where they recovered the stolen colonies. The suspects were allegedly transforming the frames of Towser's bees into their own boxes. Law enforcement also located the company's custom $50,000 forklift stolen a while ago in Woodland. An arrest was made in connection to the alleged theft of the forklift, and the investigation is ongoing. With California almond orchards buzzing with activity right now and in bloom, Butte County Sheriff's Deputy Rowdy Freeman said of the thefts, it's difficult because it's the perfect crime, as it is beekeepers stealing from other beekeepers, and it's very difficult to tell the owner from the thief. Towser Apiaries wasn't the only victim last week. South Dakota beekeeper Ryan Maxwell of T&D Honey transported colonies to California to pollinate almonds. His bees sat in a Kern County orchard near Wasco for about a day, and in a flash they disappeared. Maxwell said his family fell victim to a theft of 144 hives, of which he said the pollination income alone is valued at $29,000. And another 160 hives were reported stolen from Madera County Almond last week. Tanumurai and Antel have announced the addition of a new item to their artesian family of specialty products. It's a 2-count retail pack of artesian baby iceberg. The Tanumurai and Antel families have been growing, harvesting, and shipping iceberg lettuce for nearly 100 years. After extensive research and development for artesian baby iceberg's proprietary seed genetics, the product was first launched in the food service sector to ensure the variety would uphold the rigorous expectations and standards for quality, unique attributes, flavor, and year-round consistency that the artesian brand of produce is known for. After the last 2 years of success and growth in food service, the company has now increased the volume of the program in order to introduce the new retail pack. Studies show around 32% of food waste takes place in consumers' homes. The new 2-count artesian baby iceberg gives consumers a new twist on a familiar favorite with a guilt-free, smaller portion size that they won't have to throw away half of at the end of the week. Above and beyond that, Artesian baby iceberg is slightly sweeter in flavor than traditional iceberg, with the same familiar crunch and texture attributes. The company will officially start shipping the new item to their retail partners this week.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected, state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. Musco is proud to be America's favorite olive, offering Pearls and early California brands loved nationwide. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit our website at www.olives.com/milliontrees to join the table olive revolution.
The American West mega drought deepened so much last year that it is now the driest in at least 1,200 years and is a worst-case climate change scenario playing out live, according to a new study. A dramatic drying in 2021, is about as dry as 2002, and one of the driest years ever recorded for the region, pushed the 22-year drought past the previous record holder for mega droughts in the late 1500s and shows no signs of easing in the near future, according to a study recently published in a journal, Nature Climate Change. Study calculated that 42% of this mega drought can be attributed to human-caused climate change. Climate change is changing the baseline conditions towards a gradually drier state in the West, and that means the worst-case scenario keeps getting worse, according to the study lead author Park Williams, who is a climate hydrologist at the University of California, LA. He said it is right in line with what people were thinking of in the 1900s as a worst-case scenario, but he says that there needs to be preparation for conditions in the future that are far worse than this. Williams studied soil moisture levels in the West, a box that includes California, Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, Arizona, most of Oregon and Idaho, much of New Mexico, western Colorado, northern Mexico, and the southwest corners of Montana and Texas, using modern measurements and tree rings for estimates that go back to the year 800. That's about as far back as estimates can reliably go with tree rings.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The Musco Family Olive Company is leading the transformation of the table olive industry. We are committed to the California olive grower and invite you to grow with our family. Modern table olive orchards apply newly perfected, state-of-the-art planting and harvesting to one of the world's oldest tree crops for proven superior results. Musco is proud to be America's favorite olive, offering Pearls and early California brands loved nationwide. There is opportunity in any crop transition, and Musco is proud to offer long-term contracts and free trees to our grower partners. Visit our website at www.olives.com/milliontrees to join the table olive revolution.
And now for a check-in of national agricultural news. Agrochemical giant Bayer is alerting retail partners the company may not be able to fill some glyphosate contracts this spring due to a supplier's manufacturing problem. According to letters sent from the company, Bayer is declaring this a force majeure event, a term used to describe an uncontrollable event that prevents a party from fulfilling a contract. The letter sent out late last week stated an undisclosed supplier of a key raw material for glyphosate production experienced a mechanical failure at its manufacturing plant. As of now, given a supplier notification, they expect repairs of this production line to take around 3 months to fix. The situation comes at a particularly challenging time for farmers as they approach the spring spray season, as glyphosate and other ag chemicals were already in extremely tight supply with skyrocketing prices. How big is the fledgling U.S. hemp industry? Who is growing the crop and where? We'll know the answers in just a few days. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Coming this week, we'll know a lot more about the state of the U.S. hemp growing sector, how many growers, how many acres, and much more. USDA is about to release the results of the first U.S. survey of hemp growers since the 1940s. The survey was taken in the fall of last year by the USDA's Statistics Service at the behest of USDA's Ag Marketing Service. Bill Richmond is chief of hemp programs for that agency. He's anxious to see the results.
This data will really help USDA to improve our offerings of different USDA programs across the entire department, whether it's for risk management tools, insurance products, the wide range of research we're doing around hemp genetics. It also allows us to conduct much more targeted outreach and education with our hemp growers, and so this is incredibly important for us.
USDA will release the results of the survey this Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Carbon pipeline companies looking to take carbon emissions from ethanol plants and pipe liquid carbon through multiple states are starting to face more organized landowner resistance. An Iowa state senator's bill would take away the company's ability to use eminent domain. The bill introduced by State Senator Jeff Taylor would limit the use of eminent domain to public utilities and double the annual fee paid to the state for pipelines carrying hazardous liquids. The Senate has confirmed Dr. Robert Califf as Food and Drug Administration Commissioner as of yesterday. Dr. Califf is a cardiologist with extensive clinical research experience who has served as FDA Commissioner during President Barack Obama's final year in office. Upon the news, the National Milk Producers Federation President and CEO Jim Mulhern made a statement saying that they are congratulating Dr. Califf on his confirmation as FDA Commissioner. They are cheering for his success at a particularly challenging time given a persistence of the COVID-19 pandemic and the urgent need to address the opioids crisis and other public health issues. They are heartened that in addition to these concerns, he has also cited addressing the proliferation of plant-based products mislabeled as dairy a priority issue under his leadership. Mulhern says nutritional confusion over the products is real with meaningful public health implications, and the Biden administration has promised guidance by mid-year. Mulhern says National Milk looks forward to working with Dr. Califf as he resolves this long-standing and growing concern.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.